The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome in, wherever you are, citywide, statewide, nationwide. You are listening and looking in on Line to Gain. And you're, of course, on the Buffalo Rumblings Networks. I am the big O, Jerry Ostrowski. She is Sarah Larson down in sunny South Beach. I'm out in old, dreary Tulsa, Oklahoma, with the wind and rain that goes sweeping through the plain, as they say. We're getting ready to hit tornado season, so... Oof. I might be taking the computer down to the storm shelter in the middle of the show here coming up.
I do not know how you do it. I heard about everything that happened. I think it was in Mississippi earlier in the week. I don't know how you guys do it. And everyone's like, you live in South Florida. There's you know, hurricanes. Yes, right. But we have you know, time to prepare and whatnot. So right. I don't know how you do it, but. Well, happy.
You just get used to it. I mean, it's something. Honestly, it's really weird, but you do get used to it.
Yeah, I mean, the same in Florida. I get it. We get used to it. But are you a baseball fan at all? Are you know, opening day, big deal for you?
Not a huge deal for me, but I am a baseball fan. I'm a Phillies fan. That's where I grew up, obviously. So I like my Phillies. Good year for them last year, although. We're going to have to wait a while before Bryce Harper comes back from Tommy John surgery. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure. I didn't check the score. They started the season really weird. Like, baseball's not the same it used to be. Like, when I was a kid, you got to start and you're with your divisional team like the Mets or somebody like that or the Braves. We started in Arlington, Texas against the Texas Rangers today. We play a series with them, and then we fly to New York to play the Yankees. So those are the first two teams we play in the new season. But no, I actually, I have to admit, other than football, my favorite sport is actually college softball. I watch a ton of college softball. Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
Love it.
Oh, love nice, it. Nice. Yeah, no, I've been a sports fan, obviously, since I was like 4 or 5. I started watching WWE when I was 4 years old, back then it was WWF. Baseball, basketball, obviously football has been my biggest passion, but I've just been a sports fan for so long. So I geeked out today, you know, I got to watch my Yankees win 5-0. So I was happy with that. Garrett Cole looked amazing, came out 11 strikeouts. It's nice. We needed it because, you know, we didn't finish the last season too well. So I was excited to, you know, hopefully they do something this year because we need it.
I'm disappointed you didn't bring up the fact that Aaron Judge hit a home run his first at bat of the season the new captain of the New York Yankees.
I mean, come on. And it was all over, you know, social media, you know, he's already on track for 62. Oh. So, you know, but he actually joked, you know, about it after the game and everything. And so I'm looking forward to the season. He's, you know, I love him. He's like my, He's my Josh Allen, but for the Yankees. So, before it was Jeter, and now it's him. You know, I'm a Heat fan. I had Dwayne Wade. So when everybody was freaking out with, Chris Bosh and LeBron James, my heart was still with D Wade. So I have my one person usually on each team.
Yeah, it's funny. I've always been Philadelphia teams through and through. No love for anybody else. Like I said, it's kind of one of those things, and it's different in Buffalo. You got the Bills and Sabres, but then after that, who are your baseball team, right? Do you like the team that the Buffalo Bison are? It is Bison, am I correct? Is it Bison?
Yeah, that's a Triple A team, yeah.
Right. So I'm saying, for instance, my sons became Rockies fans because we had season tickets to the Tulsa Drillers back when they were young. And the team that they were affiliated with was the Rockies. So we got to see like 7 or 8 day one major league starters, close up and personal. Tulowitzki being our favorite, obviously, because of his last name. But, it was, I don't know, you do that. I guess basketball, you don't really have a basketball team in Buffalo. So you make do, right?
Yeah, I think most people, they either do like the Cleveland or the Toronto or maybe the Knicks. Right. I grew up, I'll be honest, I grew up a Knicks fan, and then I moved to South Florida, and you could never watch the Knicks. It was just never, they were never on television down here. And then someone invited me to a Heat game, 2003.
Right.
I, became a Heat fan after going to see Dwayne Wade. And
Sarah, it's funny you say that, because when I was a kid, usually if you didn't have a hometown team, okay, so if you were in a place that really didn't have that team that was your home team, you were either a Cubs fan or a Braves fan. And everybody's like, well, why would you like to? Well, because you could come home from school and you can put on WGR or WGN. I think it was WGN out of Chicago. And all the Cubs games were played, in the daytime, right? So as a kid, you come home from school, watch the Cubs. Or because of TBS and Turner Broadcast Station, you got all the Braves games. So those were the two teams that you saw all the time. Everybody else was just real regional.
I'm getting called a traitor in the comments. I'm very loyal, I will admit. It took me 3 years of living in South Florida not watching basketball.
You don't have to explain yourself to him.
It's all right. It's okay. It's all right. No, but yeah, I mean, at least I got to see a couple of championships because I became a Heat fan. So we're up and down again this year. The Heat right now. So I need it where I, can get it. And the Sabres were doing decent, and then they lost like 7. I don't even know it anymore. I got so frustrated with them the last couple of weeks that I'm over it. They're coming down to South Florida next week, and I'm like, what's the point of even going? It's one of the last games of the season, and neither team playing is potential for the playoffs. So it is what it is. But so, not much to talk about this week. That kind of just chit chatting. But we do have some news coming out of the league, the league meetings this week. First and foremost, what I wanted to kind of point out, one of the biggest changes was Kim Pula not being at at the owners meetings. Instead, Laura Pegula, their daughter, did represent them whenever Terry wasn't part of the meetings. So we've gotten a little bit of news on Kim that, obviously, her daughter, put out the little letter to the fans and stuff, probably about a little over a month ago now. But it's sad to see that, the reality is, Kim's not going to, be able to be in the limelight. She's not going to be making those decisions anymore. So, we still have a female representative with Laura. So it'll be interesting to see, what initiatives she decides to take and if she decides to kind of get involved the same way that Kim was.
Kim was amazing. I think as an alum, and you can ask some of the other guys, John Fina and others, before the Pegulas bought the Bills, there really was no veteran, or I should say, past alum type presence. They had one game a year where you could come up or whatever, but the Pegulas, when they purchased a team, really opened up the front door and allowed guys to come back. They had a section in the indoor suite for people during games. You went down on the field, you know, before games, all those different things. And before I forget, you look at the new training facility there and all the things that she had put in, the specialty stuff for rehab and mental fitness as well as physical fitness, she was tremendous. And without her in that building, there's been a step back. Things, you know, if you talk to some of the guys that have been around, things aren't quite like they used to be, you know, just because she's not there. I mean, she was such a warming presence. She always had the front door open. And so I wonder if this transition to a new stadium could have been a lot smoother and a lot better if she was still able to be involved in all this.
Yeah. So how do you feel? Another thing that came out of the league is now you can wear the number 0. Do you have any feelings about it? I feel like it's weird. I mean, like, and then the people I would want to be wearing a 0, and I joked about it, I think on Twitter, you know, are like the D tackles or, you know, right, a center or something, you know, and it should be like 00. It shouldn't just be 0.
Fat guys in single numbers is stupid. Fat guys don't look good in single numbers. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm saying 00s, but
even 00. I mean, it's okay. It's too much roundness, Sarah. I mean, all that round, and then you got two more round. Yeah. I mean, everything's just round. Heads round.
I just don't see why someone would want to call themselves would want to be a 0. Like,
The only guy that I know that I tried to get to wear 00 would be my son, because those were his initials when he was young. But he had other plans, so he didn't want to. He didn't want to wear that. But no, seriously, the whole thing of catering to D linemen is to give them a single. Fat guys shouldn't let other fat guys wear single numbers. That's my viewpoint.
Well, luckily for you, then it's not open for the linemen. So I just feel like if it was going to be open to someone, the lineman is like who I think.
Well, who should wear 0, right, Sarah? For us, Ed Oliver. I mean, it's his last name, right? You should give him a 0.
I mean, yeah. I think it'll end up, if someone decides to do it, I think it'll end up being, probably a special teams guy, right, or someone we bring in, you know, that might not have the number available that, you know, that could want to jump in on that. So during the team meetings, we had a couple of conversations with Bean and everything else. And obviously, the one that the conversation that went kind of viral was him kind of putting the brakes on the whole DeAndre Hopkins rumor mill, rumors and stuff like that. He didn't say that it was completely dead. He didn't, you know, he actually said that the, you know, him and OBJ might still be a potential. But he also did make a comment about how everything we're doing right now is under that $2 million threshold. And that's, whether people want to believe it or not, that I have my feeling is that's to protect our comp pick. We have until May, I think, 2nd, where, you know, we can't, you know, offset that. If we do offset it, then we lose a third round pick. There's no point of losing that third round pick. That's huge next year. So I don't foresee us making that big splash of a play. Now, again, Hopkins would be a trade candidate, not a free agent. So, if that was to happen, DeAndre Hopkins wouldn't offset the formula. OBJ though, is one that, you know, people keep on talking about. If that ever was to happen, granted, now he's saying $15 million is his asking price. I don't think he's going to get that from anyone. But even if he was, it's not going to be from us prior to, you know, May 3rd or May 2nd. So for everyone who wants this big, huge signing to happen before the draft, unless we can get them at $1.77 million, it's not going to happen. And that's pretty much what the sweet spot's been with most of our free agent picks over the or signings over the last couple weeks has been under $2 million. And it's worked brilliantly. I can't believe for those that don't know, but I'm sure you do, we signed Taylor Rapp on Monday. The numbers have not been released, but Bean did say it was under 2 million. So we're kind of looking at that 1.77 million again. So, you know, I can't believe, I mean, that guy had like an $8.5 million, you know, market value. So it goes to show that we can sign some people that just want to play for a contender. So, it's a, you know, it's exciting. I think that we'll end up signing him long term. It's only a 1 year, a 1 year deal. But if he does well, he'll get paid. And you know, the Bills only have, you know, Poyer for, you know, one more year after this. I have a feeling if Hyde doesn't play, he won't play. If we win a Super Bowl, I have a feeling he won't play. So you know, we definitely still need. And I think we still need another safety. I think we'll get one in the draft as well, but I think that we'll sign him long-term. And I think he could be very effective. He's still young. I think he's 26 years old. So do you feel like we've dried up on the whole DeAndre Hopkins and OBJ market, or do you just think it's not, it's like a draft day type of thing, or, you know, soon thereafter? Right.
Well, a couple of things. Before I forget, hit the like button, smash the subscribe button, help us out here on the Rumblings Network, and hit those buttons. But also, going back to what we were just talking about, I think that the whole thing with DeAndre Hopkins, if you really want to look at this, I think what Bean is saying is this. I'm not willing to sacrifice future development or future players' development to bring one player in, because I don't feel we're one player away from going to a Super Bowl or winning a Super Bowl. And I think right now Arizona's, you know, they want a king's ransom for DeAndre Hopkins. I think it's probably a little bit more than we're willing to give.
Right.
Then you look at OBJ, that problem is money. Are you going to go ahead and tie up this picks or money with these two guys when you know you need more than one piece to get where you want to? No, you're not. I mean, we all would love DeAndre Hopkins. I would be the first one to say, as far as all the guys that anybody talked about in free agency with receivers, guys let go, guys available, he's the one guy that excites me. He's the one guy that I like. But I'm not willing to sacrifice 27 overall, a second-round pick overall, maybe a first or a third next year, whatever it is. I'm not willing to sacrifice those for him. So
yeah,
I think that's why Bean, you know.
And if they're still asking for that, I think that that's where the, you know, like the stalling has come. Because I don't think any team is willing to give up a first-round draft pick for a 31-year-old wide receiver. I just don't. Especially with the amount of money.
Pop around in the comments says we have a Super Bowl team now. I disagree with him. I don't think we have a Super Bowl team right now. I think we're close. I think we're contenders. I think we have a chance. But this present moment, before the draft and before all the free agents are signed on this team, right now at this present moment, we don't.
I think that, see, I think it's a tricky answer to that, because I honestly believe that you can have the best team in the NFL and still not win a Super Bowl. I think that there is a percentage to everybody's season, that whether it's who you're playing, when you're playing, the weather, there's some luck involved, you know, some calls involved. There is so many things that you know, dive into whether or not you win a game, let alone win out in the season, that I kind of stress to say, I think our team is good enough to win a Super Bowl based on that. Now, would I go into every week feeling confident like we are going to completely destroy the team that we're going against? No. And that's, I want that feeling again. I want that feeling, which I had that feeling at the beginning of this year, especially after we went in and, you know, destroyed Los Angeles, destroyed Tennessee Titans. You know, obviously the Miami game was rough on everybody with the heat and everything, but we looked unstoppable after the first 2 weeks. And, you know, I kind of went in a little, you know, a little cocky. I want that feeling of being cocky, but our team actually plays better when we're not, you know, when we're not the tops, you know, of the NFL. I like that feeling of being the underdog. So we'll see how that ends up going. I do want to point out that John Osborne put in the comments, OBJ wouldn't mess with the comp picks because he's been a free agent for over a year. And I completely forgot that because he got injured the year before and became a free agent. So he's right. So right now it's just money. He went from $20 million, as what people think he's asking for to now, publicly saying, 15 in another conversation. I don't think he's even going to get that. He did say he wanted a long-term contract. I don't think that that's necessarily an issue for most people. I think most teams would want that long-term contract to space out the money for him. But with that being, said, I don't think he's going to get $15 million a year. And if he wants that, I think he needs to accept a one-year deal so that he could prove he's worth that for another year or two.
No, I'm still going back to the last question. I appreciate the optimism. I appreciate those types of things, but right now football team wise, I don't see, and we'll get into more of that as the year goes on and the offseason goes on and breaking down rosters. But I don't think how you could even possibly watch that Cincinnati game and feel good about where we are as far as a Super Bowl contender moving forward until we make some changes on the roster. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I think we all know what it felt like to after that Cincinnati game. I mean,
Wait a second. I just want to say something. And this is the thing. You can't live in segments of the season. Okay. When you do it and you've lived it, the season at that time was 16 games. The season right now is 17 games. Plus the playoffs.
Right.
You can't live in segments of the season and say, because we played well at the beginning of the season, we're a Super Bowl contender.
No.
It was the last game you played. No, and I'm not saying you. It's like, but I'm just saying, like, Papa Ron keeps bringing up the point, the last game was not at all indicative of how good the team was or is. Games like that happen. You can't have it both ways, Ron. You can't say it's bad calls, and you can't say that the team, you can't have it both ways. It doesn't go that way.
I think that most people say that the last game of the season, it kind of is indicative of how good your team will be how good your team really was or will be the next year. Obviously, there's people coming and going on your team, which is changing the landscape of your team all the time. But I feel like the way we all walked out of that game, whether you were there or you watched it on television, it was, and I think someone else put in the comments, it was humbling as a fan. It was humbling. It was. I think we all were like, where in the hell did this team come from? Because this isn't the team we watched for, 16 weeks during the regular season and then, during the playoff. But it kind of was. Towards the end of the season, there was flashes of the team that we saw against Cincinnati. And that's why I never went into a game feeling super confident that we were going to win. I never pick against the Bills, never. So whenever I do my picks with the season coming up, I will be doing picks. I'm going to let you all know I will always pick the Bills because I'm superstitious.
Yeah, exactly.
But
I'm sorry, finish and then I'll get my part.
No. I'm just saying, with that being said, I went from being confident throughout the season, and little by little, there are certain things that the team wasn't doing or they were doing that wasn't good, that by the end of the season, that confidence, started to go away. So I'm thinking by the time we got into that, that divisional playoff, we looked like crap. We looked like we didn't want to be there. We looked like we had no idea of the team that we were. And I think that, it led up to that. I feel like for 5 or 6 weeks before that, little by little, we were seeing what unraveled on that field.
When I look at this, I'm not trying to, I'm a huge Bills fan, but I try to be realistic and I try not to blow smoke. I mean, I look at this as a job as far as, I'm not on here to be a cheerleader. If I wanted to do that, I could, I could do that. But I try to look at this thing. I look at it, I try to analyze it, and I give my honest opinions. And one of the biggest things for me right now with this football team is I hate to say, I use a term, but I don't see really many dogs on this team. And when I say dogs, I don't mean D-O-G-S. I'm talking about D-A-W-G-S. Like, Josh Allen is a dog, right? He's a dog. I will give him that. Granted, he did not have his best season last year. arm injury or not. And we've talked about that ad nauseum. I talked about that the other day with a friend as far as his red zone turnovers. And I think he might have been the most turned over person in the league. But that's besides the point. Josh is a dog. When I watched him in that Miami game, when I was in Highmark Stadium and watched him right in front of me, because I was at, we were right there, Sarah, it was on our sideline in that corner when he ran that ball against Miami down there and got the first down, basically put the team on his back. That's a dog, right? Where are the rest of them? Because it takes some of those types of guys. Those are the types of guys it takes to win Super Bowls, okay? Everybody, you're going to have a few superstars, but it's those middle-range guys, it's those dog-type players, those blue-collar dudes. Those are the ones that put you over the top. And I might be a little biased with this guy, but a guy like Creed Humphrey that plays center for the Kansas City Chiefs, he is a freaking dog. He's right now down in Oklahoma City. He works every day with my buddy. They're working hard, getting ready for the season already. That guy's a dog. I want to see more of those types of players on our sideline. Who that is, I don't know. I think Diggs is a dog. I think Diggs is. I mean, he's a passionate dude. He plays. I think he's that guy. Who else is going to come along with those dudes? That's what I want to see.
Yeah, I think Daquan showed up this year. I think he was a dog this year. I would love to have signed him to a one-year extension. Milano, I think, had – I mean, obviously, right. He was all
and
pro. John,
and John's like, oh, come on, Milano was a total dog. Yeah, I get it. He was. He slipped the top of my mind. I'm not going to rattle off.
No. But I honestly feel like, even though he was an all-pro and everything, I feel like Milano showed – us his best flashes with Edmonds right. on the field. So I still kind of say that they went hand in hand. It'll be very, very interesting to see what we do at middle linebacker.
Middle linebackers like ranked the last position in the draft as far as prospects, like the worst depth position in the draft this year is middle linebacker. You know what else is close? Safety. You know what else is close? Well, offensive and defensive linemen.
Yeah, there are a couple, and that's the thing. I feel like it is a depth position. Like safety, I feel like there's a couple of safeties that we can get in the mid rounds. Same thing with the line. I feel like the offensive line, if you can't get your guy in the first round, I wouldn't like stress until like the third or fourth, because you're going to be reaching. Right. But a lot of people have us taking Jack Campbell at 27. Because there's not a lot of linebackers out there. I feel
he worked out for the Steelers this week and just got raked through the coals, I guess, from when I all the way down to he got the little hands treatment.
Yeah. So I feel like at this point in time, we're reaching. Like he might be one of the only, you know, quality guys left at linebacker come 27, but he's not, he might not be a first rounder. He might not even be a second rounder, but someone's going to reach on him. And I'm just exactly nervous correct. That, you know, we need a linebacker so bad that, you know, that I feel like we're going to reach to get somebody that I don't quite necessarily feel like fits in the mold. Yes.
I think Campbell's your premier middle linebacker type guy, but in a 3-4, your old style defense, your middle linebacker in a 4-3, I don't necessarily know if he fits a 4-2-5.
Yeah. And a lot of people are actually, you know, joking that we keep on signing more, you know, safeties that we might only have one linebacker on the field. But
I agree with Papa Ron here. He says sounding more and more like we aren't going to stay at 27. Now we finally agree on something, Ron. I like that. I like that assessment. I don't want to be a 27. Yeah. I want to go and get more. I want to get more second day picks.
So I'm looking at it either way. I'm looking at it as if we can trade up. Yes. Trade up into the top 20 to get a playmaker.
He said, yay. We agreed.
Oh, yay. I was like, what? But if we can move up inside the 20, that is not going to cost us in, you know, something unreasonable. But I can see it costing us, you know, say, if we're only going to move up, say, 7 spots, say we move up to the 20th spot, it will probably cost us next year's first and then maybe this year's fourth. But if we can do that and get somebody that's, preferably wide receiver, is the way I've been, you know, kind of looking at it, then I say do it. If not, I wholeheartedly believe we're gonna drop down in the second.
John Osborne agrees and says he thinks we're gonna play a lot of 4-1-6 this
That's
year.
Kind of been the joke, is that we'll have one linebacker on the field most of the time, and we're gonna play, you know, 6 DBs, whether it's, you know, safety or you know, it'd be interesting to see how we have that out there.
And I want to get something that Sterling talked about. If you want to bring his comment up, he talks about tight ends, saying the Bills don't even use the tight end. They have, nor do they play much 21 personnel. That's, to me, the number one thing that I think this offense can do better in the upcoming season. They talk about targeting Diggs, all this stuff, targeting him more and everything, running game. To me, 21 personnel is a huge, huge advantage to the offense. I would love to see them utilize it more. I agree with Sterling. They don't do it enough. I wish they would.
Well, I made a comment, and I know we laughed about it. I think it was last week or the week before. Last summer, they were doing 2 tight end sets a lot during camp. So to the point where it was being talked about. Right. I actually have a couple of, you know, you're not allowed to record and, you know, post it on social media and stuff. But if it's longer than a minute or whatever. So I actually have some videos of us doing it. And I was like, oh, this is what we can do with OJ Howard. Then we ended up letting go OJ Howard. So I was like, right. Well, this not going to happen for some reason. And I think Morris showed out. He beat out OJ Howard during not only camp, but during preseason. And then they abandoned that mindset. So I'm not quite sure why, you know, if you had the opportunity, I hope that they decide to go back to that. And I would love us to have another tight end. But again, you're only going to use pick 27 or, you know, second round, if that person is going to change your, you know, offense. And if we're not going to utilize, we don't utilize the tight end we have enough, you know, for him to be paid, what is it, $56 or $58 million.
Right.
So I would love, I mean, I've been a pro Darnell Washington. I like Shoemaker out of Michigan later on in the rounds, but I feel like there's a possibility there. For a couple of that roster spot, but again, what's the point if you're not going to use them? So,
right. But I think you're right. I think we will take a tight end. Daryl Fletcher talks about the beauty of this draft is that tight end might be the deepest position in the draft if they decide to adjust. You know, Quentin Morris, they could move at any point if they wanted to, but I do think it would make it better in this offense. My theory had a little bit to do with our running backs, why we didn't play a lot of 21, and it's because a lot of 21 personnel had to do with the running backs in our offensive line. 21 personnel is more of a zone blocking type formation. You can run power and counter out of it, but really you're bringing more people into the box when you do that. So you're adding a gap. It's more of a zone blocking formation. I don't believe we're the greatest zone blocking teams. And Cook being young, I know he ran the zone at Georgia. I don't think our backs were great zone backs. So it really didn't fit our personnel in other areas, I think, more than the tight end spot.
All right. Well, so just for, I guess, some housekeeping, Jordan Phillips was re-signed this year for 1 year, $3 million.
What did Calais get at Atlanta? Do you know?
I have not seen. I think actually I did see it. I want to say it was 1 year, $8 million.
Oh, so he got that much more? Okay.
No, that wasn't Calais. That was the linebacker, I think, that I wanted.
He went back to Seattle.
Bobby Wagner.
That was Bobby Wagner.
See, you're reading my brain. but yeah, so I didn't see, I don't think they released, his terms yet. The only Taylor Rapp as well. We signed him for a 1 year deal. That is not part of the cap right now on our list. So the terms haven't been released, but Bean said it was, he verbally said in an interview that it was under 2 million. And again, that's to protect the comp pick formula right now. Right now, we do have a third round comp pick for Tremaine leaving. So right now, we can't really sign anyone over $2 million or that third round pick goes away. But pretty much, what was the other thing? Oh, so right now we're at 8.5-ish with remaining cap. That now includes, I know last week I had said it was about 11. It now includes Questenberry, Damian Harris, and the David Edwards signing. So all those people are on there. The only one that's not is Rapp. So if it's the 1.77-ish that we think, that'll take us down to, you know, 6.75, which is pretty much what we need to go into the draft and to go into the season. So obviously, if we want to do anything additional, there will be, you know, moves that need to be made, whether it's restructuring or extensions or letting people go. There's not a lot of people in my eyes that they could let go without leaving a glaring hole. That would be, you know, a big deal with the money, especially going into the summer. A lot of those people that don't have the guarantee, you know, guaranteed contracts are low, you know, low anyways. So,
right.
You know, I don't see us making too many of those moves. You know, obviously Mitch Morris is, you know, one of those candidates, but we don't have an answer at center. So if, you know, a realistic answer at center. So I don't think that, you know, that would happen. And then, you know, obviously we have the trade option with Oliver, if someone's willing to fork something over. But then, you know, and I still think we need a defensive tackle to begin with. I think that that's going to be one of our top needs for the draft, not necessarily just for this year, unless we do get rid of Oliver for some reason or another. But I feel like for the future, after this year, we have nobody, no defensive tackles at all on the that you know is worth. I don't actually no, not none of them. None of them have a contract past 2024. So we're going to need that, you know, we're going to need safety as much as, you know, it's a less of a need. It's still a need at this point, but I, you know, we've made the offensive line better. It's better, but it's not, it doesn't make me feel confident yet. And I want someone to be able to battle Brown, but then you're using pick 27, say, on an offensive lineman. Say we get a tackle there. You know, is it smart to do that? Because what if Brown beats him out in camp? Then it's kind of like another wasted pick.
Yeah, but do you worry about that? I mean, is your number one goal to get better up front? Are you worried about who beats out who? I mean, if you can find a guy at 27 to beat out a guy that started in the league for 2 years, I think that's pretty good.
But if he doesn't beat him out, that's my point. If he doesn't beat him out, then he's, you know, our pick 27 sitting the bench.
Right. So, I know. And that's the choice you have to make. I mean, but then, you know, does he come in the next year and you get to move somebody else or whatever? But yeah, obviously if you're going to pick a guy at 27, he's got to be polished. He's got to be an immediate starter, which are they really looking to replace those two tackles? So you're probably right. Do you not go, you don't go offensive line or you don't go, you know, in the first round anyway, you go somewhere else. But I just keep going back to the fact that unless there's just a prize sitting there, if there's just somebody we can't believe fell to that spot, you move that pick and you move back and you start amassing numbers and you stockpile second day and third day picks, because really that's where your football team is going to be built.
Yeah. I mean, I feel, especially with that 27 pick, there's not a lot of people that I would take in the first round at 27 in all of the mocks that I've been doing of people who are left. I have been very pro moving back, you know, in picking up the extra picks. But again, you know, how many of these people are going to actually make the team down the road? So I'd rather 3 or 4 picks that are going to, you know, make a difference. Then 8 or 9 people who not.
Here's a question for you, okay? And because you love this guy, this is one of your favorite guys in the draft. It's a guy you've targeted since day one. And we talk about Bijan Robinson all the time, but Bijan Robinson, right? If Bijan's there at 27, is Bijan going to make your team a Super Bowl team? Do you need him at 27?
1,000%. I'm sorry. 1,000%. I think Bijan should go in the top 10.
Can he play middle linebacker?
I don't think it matters if we're scoring 40 plus.
You think that Bijan is going to make that big of a difference?
I think that Bijan could make that big of a difference. I think it adds a wrinkle that we've never had. We can take the ball and have a reliable back. And not saying that Cook can't be that person this year coming up. He could be. But I just think that it is something that the team could utilize, not needing Josh to be the 800-yard running back that he has been. But I think the biggest thing is red zone efficiency. And I think that within, especially last year, we looked terrible every time we were inside the 20. And that's because we can, even inside the 10, our running backs could never find the freaking end zone. And we did away with having Josh be that person too. So I feel like Bijan is that much of a difference maker. So yes, if Bijan was there at 27, I wholeheartedly, and this is why I'm not a GM, I would take him.
I agree with Trey Williams on the comments. He says Bijan behind the 24th ranked O-line is not getting more points than average Joe running back behind Eagles line.
Yeah. I mean, again, though, I think that we've upgraded our line to an extent. And I think that all these people will, you know, obviously they're going to have to get used to playing with each other. But, you know, I think that with the offseason, if he's there at 27, I take him. And whether or not he makes a difference year one, he definitely is going to make a difference in, you know, years 2 through 5, which was what we would have with a running back in the first round.
No, I like it. I mean, these are all, there's no right answer to these these questions or
it scares the crap out of me how many people want either Simpson or Campbell. I just don't feel like the linebackers are first round quality. It's killing me. I just feel like it's a reach. I really do.
I'll keep going back to what I say all the time, which is championship teams are built up the middle. They're built with their offensive and defensive lines.
But at this point in time, and I don't disagree. I feel like we need to get the offensive line better. But I feel like at pick 27, and again, we won't know until the pick comes along who's still there. I don't feel like with all of the you know, mock drafts I've been doing, I don't feel like there is a offensive lineman that has been there for most of those picks, except for God, why can't I think of his name all of a sudden? But he's a left tackle. So I don't feel like we would be picking him up anyways. So most, you know, DeJuan Jones, he's a right tackle. Some people are saying right guard. He's only played right tackle. And that was the question I asked him at the Senior Bowl, was, you know, what he feels like moving around on the line. And he said he feels like he can do whatever someone tells him to do, but he's been strictly right tackle throughout college. So, you know, do you take that risk where you pick somebody up hoping you can move him around and then he doesn't pan out moving him around?
Here's something that I think needs to be thought about. And I saw it earlier in the comments. We pick at 27, but then we don't pick again until 59. Okay. That's a pretty big gap. Mm-hmm. If I can move out of 27 and get one or two picks between 27 and 59, I feel better than picking just at 27 and 59. Because I think the second round, third round is where the quality of this draft lies. I think that's where you can get some really good players at a much cheaper rate than you can in the first round. Well, everything about the draft is potential. I mean, everything's potential.
Of course.
but seriously, I think that that's a big gap. I'd rather have more picks earlier than 59. And if we can move out of 27 to do it, I would do it, unless the player that we all love is there.
Yeah.
And who that is, I have no idea.
If we trade back from 27 to, you know, early 30s or whatever, you might not get another, you know, that team might not have another second round pick. So you're probably not going to get another second in order to move back. But what you will probably get is maybe, their third and fourth, depending on how far back you move. So it definitely could definitely add up. I do want to say a couple of people responded back. Papa Ron was right. I was talking about Anton Harrison. He is a left tackle kind of exclusively. Thank you for reading my brain today. So that's who I was talking about. He's the only person that I've seen as kind of a first round grade that's still been on the board. DeJuan Jones, I honestly think that he was a beast at the Senior Bowl. I was like, holy crap. He was manhandling people, but the one complaint I have about him is he's very slow, off the snap. So I am very nervous that Josh is going to be, going through that same worry of running for his life again if he has, you know, an edge guy who is too fast for him to control. So, DeJuan Jones, I think, can be that person, but he's, again, some people are talking about moving him inside. I think he's too tall to move inside, personally, but you probably have more of a comment on that one. But then someone else also said, is Sarah thinking about the Syracuse tackle? Bergeron, I think, is that second or third round guy. I think he's kind of trending now towards the second round. I would love to get him in the second round. I think he's definitely, worthy of a pick there. And we did do a private workout with him. And sorry for the people who are watching. My camera kind of took a nosedive. I don't know if it's looking all blurry on your guys then, but.
It's kind of like an old 80s video. It's kind of like the aha take on me video right now. I'm kind of enjoying it.
I don't know what happened, but
I'm watching a video and I haven't paid for the subscription and it's all blurry.
There you go. I don't know what happened, but I'm sure the blurred out version of me is probably more flattering. So just quickly, before we get going, another thing they talked about at the league meetings was the future Super Bowl locations. So 2024 and 2025 are set. Obviously 2024 is in Las Vegas. 2025 is at the Caesars Superdome in New Orleans. They're saying that 27 or 28 could be possibly Nashville if they get their new stadium approved and ground is broken. But then they start talking about regurgitating the different locations again, whether it's Atlanta, Tampa, Arizona, Los Angeles, kind of like, gets me a little frustrated. Miami's on the list as well. So I think it'll be cool to have it in Tennessee. But Atlanta would be fun because it's been a while, but I'm, kind of tired that they're, talking about the same locations all over again. Los Angeles, Arizona was just last year. So I hope they do something different. But are you, the question I have here is, are you against them playing in a place that's cold if it's a dome like Minnesota or Detroit?
I don't have a problem playing in a place that's cold if it's got a dome.
Like the Super Bowl, though, do you think, are you against?
No, I don't. I'm not against that at all, especially if the town's a good town. And if you're really trying to spread the game across the country fairly, I mean, that's what you do. But I'm also not opposed to picking one stadium and having it there every season. Like with Vegas, the way Vegas is, if you want to have the championship in Vegas, I'm all for it. I mean, obviously that's not going to happen. People want to share the love, especially guys like Jerry Jones that own their own stadium. But no, I'm not opposed to it at all. I mean, I have no problem when Minnesota had it or anybody else. And I had no problem with New York having the Super Bowl, even with no roof. I thought that was pretty cool. So. Yeah, I'm pretty easy when it comes to that type of stuff.
I just don't want, and it goes the same thing with Tampa and Miami. I feel like with it being in Tampa and Miami, or even like Jacksonville, if they were ever to get it, I feel like the weather can play could play into the game. And I understand, you know, the weather plays into the game. It's football. But I feel like, you know, if it rains, it's not only affecting the player, the game itself, the fans. I just feel like it you know, kind of, you know, ruins that atmosphere. And it can happen if there's no dome, it can happen pretty much anywhere. Obviously with the weather being effective, but it can happen in Nashville if they don't have a dome in Nashville. So, with the new stadium that they're planning on building there. But the whole thing about having it in one location, so much money is brought to that area with the Super Bowl that I don't know if that would necessarily be fair, but I do look at it as, you know, maybe if that's the case, we should be looking at how, you know, certain teams that will never have a Super Bowl can benefit some way or another.
Well, they're never going to have it in one location. I mean, it'd be cool if they did. I'm kind of okay with some of these other ideas. They're throwing out big college stadiums. Now, granted, it'd be hard to have it in Ann Arbor in February. That would be a little rough, but you know, there are some college stadiums that are worthy of having a Super Bowl. And as a matter of fact, the first Super Bowl played, I believe, was in Tulane Stadium in New Orleans. If not number one, it was maybe number two. But no, I think the way they do it right now is fine. It's spreading the love and all that. One other little tidbit of news that I thought was interesting this week before we get out of here, but the Washington Commanders, three bids of $6 billion to buy the team. Obviously, they will no longer be owned by Daniel Snyder.
My wallet for that and took out the $6
million. One of those groups has Magic Johnson is part of the ownership group. Yep. So, that was pretty cool. I can't wait for that to happen. It's sad to see the Redskins, a once proud franchise, be the way they are right now. They'll get a new stadium. They'll get a new owner, and it'll be exciting to see what happens.
All right. So John commented, trade Arizona our first for their second round pick and Hopkins. I'm not okay with that. I think it's still too much. I think we can. I think in the end, there will be an opportunity. Whoever gets Hopkins, it's going to be for like a third. At the most. And that's if someone is willing to take some of the contract. I honestly do not think we are going, anyone is going to give a first. And granted, it's a swap. I get it. You know, we give them their our first and they get, you know, and we get their second. But I just don't think it needs to be that high, especially after the Cooks, transaction was a fifth and next year sixth. You know, I wouldn't mind doing a conditional, for D-Hop, have it be like third, but then if he's certain playing time or whatnot, then they get, you know, an additional pick next year, depending on that, it gets moved up. But I don't think we need to give up, our first, for anybody at this point, unless we're moving up in the first round for a draft, for a draft pick.
I actually don't mind that scenario, especially if you believe, again, if you're in the camp that believes that Hopkins is the piece that puts you over the top. As much as I want him, I don't think we're one piece away, but I could see that if that was the case. Also, I haven't studied it, but I wondered if this was the case, and Bills Are Electric brings it up. Hopkins' contract is expensive, both in terms of cash and cap hit. We can't absorb that cap this year or next.
So I explained it on last week's show that yes, we can. If you know, one of two things happens. Obviously, if Arizona wants to take on more of the cap hit, his cap hit for us would be 15.5 1 year and 19 the next. Obviously, that would have to be restructured. In order, I think it's 19 this year and 15.5 next year. It would have to be restructured once he comes over. So yes, we can do a couple of moves internally to get that money, to bring him over and then restructure, add a void year or two. And, we can definitely change some of it to a bonus. First year, we can literally get his cap hit all the way down to like $4.5 million. So it is a possibility. It can happen. I am not worried about his contract because he says he's willing to negotiate it. He's willing to restructure. If Arizona wants a better pick, they will come out of pocket and take on more of that cap hit. It's already a cap hit for them. You know, there is dead cap for them. So why not? If you want a better pick and you're, you know, trying to stockpile picks for the future, and make your team better in the future, why not do it? That's what happened with Cooks. They took on, you know, some of his, they kept some of his contract and got a fifth and a sixth, which it kills me that they only got a fifth and a sixth, plus they took on some of the contracts. So we can definitely do it. Like I said, we can restructuring Hopkins. We can put him down to, you know, about $4.5 million for this year. It is definitely a possibility if we want it to happen. Would it take us restructuring or extending other people? Yes, but it can happen.
But again, I also go back to that as and then you get into cap jail for years to come to where, you know, you're a mediocre football team because you're still trying to get out of the hole. I mean, what are you willing to risk? What future right. are you willing to
But if Arizona is willing to take on some of that cap before he's traded, then it's even less money that we have to restructure. So right. I honestly think, adding void years, it's a risky deal. You're basically saying, okay, for this 1 year, this 2 years, this 3 years, however you want to do it. I think Vaughn's is 2 years. They're not playing yet. We have, a dead cap hit because of that. The signing bonus is split up over those years as well. So, if someone is getting, is signs for 4 years and two of them are void years and it's a $20 million signing bonus. Well, those 2 years that are void years, we're still paying $5 million, even though the person's not on the team. So it can happen. But I honestly think there are people that can make us better. And I think D-Hop is one of them. I think OBJ is one of them. I wouldn't mind either one of them. And if I'm willing to pay, D-Hop around that amount of money, I'm willing to pay OBJ just a little bit less because of his injury history. And we haven't seen him come back from this injury. That's my only concern at this point with OBJ is we haven't seen him play since he, tore his ACL. So
I'm out on him. I'm in on Hopkins, but I'm out on OBJ.
Okay. I mean, I would take either. I really would. Now again, I wouldn't take OBJ at 15. It would have to be a little bit less, but I just think having a solid number two or a 1B, or whatever you want to call them, is what we need. We need that, that
him and Diggs in the same locker room ends up being like, it's like the Gotti wars where John Gotti, the Gambino wars where Gotti takes over and gets rid of Paul Castellano to get control of the Gambino family.
I just don't like the narrative because everyone who has played with OBJ has said how amazing he is and what a great teammate he is and what a locker room guy he is.
That's why he's on how many teams.
And then you got media. Well, again, he was hurt a lot in Cleveland. So And look who he had throwing to him. So, I mean, no offense to Baker, but offense to Baker. But it's one of those things that I feel like he's gotten this negative notion within the media. I don't like it because, like, again, everyone I'm an OBJ fan. I think that.
Are you?
I am. I think, yes, I am.
I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell.
So. Yeah, really. I hope we can pick somebody up in the draft and then this all becomes, all for naught. I still think I don't know if the person in the draft, unless we, if we get somebody in the first round, if we get, you know, Quentin Johnson, or if we get Zay Flowers, or if we get, you know, we're not going to get JSN, but if we got one of those guys, I think I would feel confident enough in starting them. But I don't know if the Bills will. And that's my concern, is if we're just getting somebody in the draft, whether or not the Bills are going to actually utilize them and have them be our true number two and compete with Gabe through all facets of, you know, of camp and everything else, and to truly go out there and try to shine. If we traded or picked up a free agent like OBJ, or we traded for D-Hop, I feel like that person automatically is kind of getting slipped into that that number two role. So that's why I kind of feel like we still need the veteran guy and one person and one wide receiver in the draft. So it all just depends on who's hanging out at number 27. But I'm on board with the fact that I don't think we pick at 27.
Well, we'll find out soon. What are we, 2 weeks away?
No, it's a month away.
Month away?
A month,
it's still a month,
a month
away?
From today. Ugh. Yep. Yep. The 28th. I believe it is. So I fly in that Thursday morning. So, you know, you guys will get coverage directly from the draft.
What I will say is this before we go. In all our discussion, and by the way, this was going to be a short show, remember? We're in an hour. We're in an hour. And again, I appreciate everybody for tuning in. Smash the like button. Hit the subscribe button. We're on every week Thursday, 9 Eastern, 8 Central, Line to Gain. Myself, Sarah, Buffalo Rumblings Network. For the Bills to be successful and win a Super Bowl, they will never, ever do it by going out and signing veteran players, big-name guys, henchmen for 1 year, 2 year type deals. They have to do
LA
what other
–
that's we're not – let me finish my comment. We are not L.A. because I was just getting ready to tell you. We're not L.A. We're not New York. We are a small market football team. And teams like us, just like Kansas City, you have to draft well, bring in situational veteran players, and develop your own. That's the way I feel about it. They've done a really good job of that. We've had a little bit of a drop-off lately. I think they're continuing to go with that route. And again, we'll see what happens because our head coach is now going to be our defensive coordinator. You put all that together with some other things, we'll see. But we're never going to hire – we're never going to bring in henchmen for hire for 1 year at a time and do anything.
All right. I just – before we head out, Billy Williams, trade Gabe and a first for Jefferson in Minnesota. It would take probably four firsts to get Quentin Jefferson.
Billy, if they could pull that off, I'm paying for the parade.
Right. I would be like Bean would be the all-time GM if that is something we could pull off. That is not happening. It would take Gabe, Oliver, and probably, you know, three or four firsts to get Jefferson. It's not happening. Justin Jefferson's right. Not coming. Not happening.
Well, hey, remember, we got a Facebook page. You can go on Facebook, you can go on you go on Twitter. Drop some questions for us. We'll answer your questions next week here on the show. We'll do more of that. We'll talk more about the upcoming season. I'm sure we'll get into more player speculation. Hopefully we'll have more news as far as the Bills and the rest of the league moving forward when we get to next Thursday. But again, we're here every week, Thursday night, 9 Central, or 9 Eastern, 8 Central, myself and Sarah on the Buffalo Rumblings Network. This is the newly branded Line to Gain show. Thank you for listening. Hit the subscribe button, the like buttons, all that stuff. Thank you for spending time. Thank you for the people in the comments. We appreciate you. Go Bills, and as always, one love.